Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm delighted and privileged to welcome not just a good friend, but a very senior professional turned entrepreneur, Mr. Anish Bafna. Anish, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. Really pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Anish is currently the CEO and managing director of the Healthium Group. He was earlier the president of Baxter International for Japan. So Anish, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Sure. So Ashutosh, I would say that, you know, all are related to moving into uncharted territories. When I started my career, the HR had told me, don't worry about designations, remuneration or perks. Mm-hmm. Just follow learning and the rest will follow. And that sort of learning has stuck with me forever.
Right.
I guess from a milestone perspective, the first milestone was, you know, at the beginning of my career, moving to an unknown country like Vietnam, building businesses from scratch there. That opened, you know, me up to being consistently mobile. Mm-hmm. I think mobility is a very important factor in any professional journey, because you keep on learning new things when you travel. Mm-hmm. Not worry about what could go wrong. You know, I moved into a completely uncharted territory.
Yeah.
So the only way was to go up, understand different cultures and beliefs and their impact on daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, that also helped you to build networks around the globe and built in me a spirit of adventure. So I think moving out was the first milestone.
Mm-hmm.
That really sort of, enhanced my learning opportunities. The second was, to move back to India. You know, when my boss offered me the job of heading Baxter in India, Sanjay was his name, I was aghast, you know, because I would be moving to India, managing a team of 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
From being in Malaysia, where I was handling just a 45 people team.
Mm-hmm.
I said yes to the job immediately because it was fascinating.
Correct.
But what it gave me was an opportunity to understand India, connect back to the family.
Mm.
It gave me the courage that size is irrelevant. And the transformation of the Indian business that we did will always remain the high point of my career. Right? I guess more importantly, I discovered that the talent pool of India was fantastic. It had unmatched caliber. And given the right direction, it could, you know, prosper anywhere in the world.
Mm.
The third was to, you know, the movement of from Japan to India.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been in Japan for a short time, but it was very memorable because I found one of the most passionate people on earth there with very high levels of integrity. And the decision to take on what I'm doing now was a very difficult decision at that point in time. Right? On one side, there was the opportunity of creating self-sufficiency to the extent possible. Mm-hmm. In the Indian medtech industry in an entrepreneurial mode.
Mm.
And the other, leaving a company that was second nature to me and a team that had trusted me with their professional lives.
Mm.
So I guess, you know, not having spent enough time in Japan will be possibly the only regret I'll harbor. But then there's the opportunity to create a scaled medtech company out here, out of India, which would not have come every day. And I hope that this becomes the third largest milestone of my career.
Fantastic. So Anish, let's talk about the Healthium Group. You just mentioned to me that you are the largest manufacturer of, I think, surgical needles in the world. But tell me about your journey from a professional to Healthium.
So Healthium is a very interesting, sort of opportunity. We are a group of three companies with five manufacturing plants, all based out of India.
Mm-hmm.
We've got two of our companies based in India and one based out of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this, this opportunity interesting, because there is no large company of medtech company of scale out here in India. You know, pretty much 80 to 85% of the market is dominated by imports, both from multinationals and from other smaller players across the globe.
Mm.
And, you know, for a country like us, with the kind of skills that we have in engineering, polymers, plastics, chemical, pharmaceutical, etc., I think it's a pity that, you know, we haven't really been able to create a play the way pharma did many years back. So I think that was sort of, you know, what interested me in coming out here and creating, the Healthium Group.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been very interesting because, you know, as we speak, we are the largest manufacturer of suture needles in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But we are also the largest manufacturer of sutures in India.
Okay.
We've come up with a brand new division on arthroscopy, where, you know, we are the largest manufacturers of knee implants and shoulder implants in the country.
Wow.
We've been able to consolidate all the three businesses and bring them under this roof, which has given us USFDA approvals, ISO approvals, CE markings. But what was most interesting was that we were able to take a relatively sort of complacent play into being a high IP oriented play. So currently we have about 55 patents that were all granted to us over a period of last 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And over a period of time, we think that with what we have right now, we can really scale it up to be a contributor not only to the Indian medtech space, but be a global player and supply to the rest of the world.
Amazing. And when I was reading about you, I was fascinated by your vision to create access to precision medtech for every patient globally.
Right.
Tell me, what have been some of your challenges as you have set out to achieve this vision?
Yeah, I think the vision was a relatively simpler, simpler to make, mm-hmm. primarily because we were already in one of every six surgeries globally.
Mm-hmm.
And my view was that, why can we not be in every surgery globally and, take the product to places where a lot of multinationals would not want to go to because of various reasons, right? So coming here, it has definitely been a transformational journey. For us, the foray of bringing the three companies together was an exercise in creating a common vision, culture, and values that inspired the teams, to work collaboratively.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, there were three different cultures that had to be sort of brought together.
Mm-hmm.
So the organizational design and structure at Healthium went through a phenomenal transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And we employed diverse talent from across the globe, right? So, I was lucky that we were able to attract very high caliber talent.
Mm-hmm.
We got Vishal Maheshwari, our CFO, who was the CFO for Abbott in India.
Mm-hmm.
Konkan, CHRO, came from Jubilant, and Tally's background. Our head of businesses are ex-Diageo and Danaher. Our head of clinical affairs is ex-Baxter. Our head of strategic initiatives is ex-Goldman Sachs and UBS.
Wow.
We were able to create a great team that came together. And I guess that was where I spent most of my time initially, because I didn't want to compromise on the quality of talent that we have.
Correct.
And then the focus was around processes, right? So, when you take three companies together, you have to really align all the processes together.
Mm.
So as a part of the digital transformation, we put in SAP HANA, Concur for expenses, C4CS, Salesforce Excellence tool, reverse auction for our purchases, account receivable automation, IQVIA for visibility on secondary data, a tool for international freight management, Microsoft Teams, et cetera. And that sort of process, took a lot of change management because, people were not used to working with these kind of processes. Excel used to dominate pretty much everything that happened in the organization.
Correct.
Then the third was to invest in R&D
because
we had great products, but then you needed a continuous slew of new products that you kept on launching over a period of time.
Mm.
So we had to build in R&D and new product development capabilities.
Mm.
In 2019, we got a USFDA recertification. And again, I'm proud to say that we are one of the only USFDA accredited plant in this part of the world.
Wow.
Right. And with the R&D engine moving, the idea is to move us up the value chain
mm-hmm.
and create products that can be patented, that have an IP, that are significantly differentiated from other players globally.
Mm.
And that in itself has been an exercise. So the example I gave earlier of creating an arthroscopy range for knee and shoulder interventions is called Cironix. And now we have one of the largest range of products in the country. We decided that we won't copy, any other player. We will create our own design, our own IP.
Mm.
And that range alone has given us about 52, patents. So, we feel that, this journey has just started for us. It's a constant process of evolution.
Correct.
The last 2.5 years of work that we put in really played out very well during COVID, because in COVID, while surgeries were down 30 to 35%, we were actually able to grow both our top line and the bottom line by a healthy number. And that sort of gives us the confidence that, all this focus around people, process, and plan should play out well in years to come.
Mm. So, what you just told me about the incredible team you have built and all the work that you're doing with different kinds of software which are improving efficiencies. But tell me, how is technology, and I'm talking now both manufacturing technology, people technology, and you said 52 odd patents you've got. How is technology changing healthcare, medtech devices?
I guess, one of the central pivots has been COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at healthcare, other than the technology that goes into building products
mm-hmm.
or automation in the plants, you know, we're still relatively far behind a lot of other industries. But I guess COVID has been a game changer in the sort that the healthcare industry has started embracing the growth of digital outreach and delivery through data analytics, telemedicine, e-pharmacy. You know, you have online and video consultant consultations that have become a norm now.
Correct.
Tele-assessments, e-medicine have come to play, you know, during the lockdown and continue to rise. You know, patients are more comfortable talking to patients on phone rather than going and meeting them out there. You know, plus social distancing and quarantine norms have also made it difficult for them to get that kind of access, right? And I guess this is a game changer for a country like India, where you have a big paucity of infrastructure, healthcare infrastructure, right? Whether it be hospitals, number of beds, number of doctors, number of nurses. And that should play out beautifully, you know, for countries like us, which are sort of underpenetrated on healthcare over a period of time, right? So while the immediate and the now is more focused on COVID-19, the long term will be more about redrawing the landscape and to align to the new reality, strengthening preventive care and setting up infrastructure for a much more robust healthcare setup.
And which countries would you say are, you know, your real competitors, and what is your big advantage?
So from a provider perspective, you know, of medtech products, China has of course been at the forefront. And one of the reasons China has done so well is also because it's a captive market. And the size of the industry as compared to India is about 13 times.
Wow.
Which is significantly large, and it gives a lot of, you know, headroom for the local players to keep on funding their R&D initiatives, to keep on funding their international forays, to make mergers and acquisitions internationally, right? So China definitely is one of the largest player in the market for that. But then you have also have some smaller countries like Turkey, you know, where the entrepreneurial spirit has sort of, you know, helped them create some nice niche, but and small, but very good plays that are there in the marketplace. Europe definitely has a lot of small entities that have, you know, prospered over a period of time. Now, most of these are family run.
Correct.
And they haven't grown internationally. But when you look at Europe and when you look at some of the countries they're present in, they have been able to, you know, bring out great products. At the forefront, it will always be the US, right? Because of the very large market, as well as most of the large companies emanating out of the US. So these, I guess, are the critical players in the medtech front.
So I just want to, you know, ask you a further question on your comment that China is 13 times India. I thought, you know, two countries, equivalent populations, healthcare needs very similar, and your products are probably going to every possible surgery.
Right.
Right. Why is the difference so vast? I mean, are people using other kinds of products in India?
So just to give you, you know, sort of a ballpark number, India needs about 3,500 surgeries per 100,000 population.
Okay.
Right. Currently, we do about 1,400.
Okay.
So the penetration is only at about 33-34% at this point in time of surgical interventions. But as, you know, with rapid urbanization, with larger number of hospitals coming by, with more, you know, penetration of insurance, I guess that equation, and plus, you know, when the sort of economy moves from a 2,000 per capita to a 4,000 per capita, a lot of these things will change, right? That will give us scale. And scale will help us to invest more on some of those critical areas where China has been ahead of us.
Okay. Okay. And there must be a lot of small scale players in India as well.
So India has a lot of small scale players. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, on the medtech front, the large players, you can count them on your fingertips. And I guess the other area where we've suffered is because of the size of the market, we've really not been able to attract a lot of foreign players with investments in manufacturing.
I see.
So what happens is that if you're manufacturing in India, then you start looking at exporting, and that gives rise to a lot of ancillary units. So today, for some of the products that I would want to manufacture in India, I find it difficult because it needs 200 to 300 different parts, and I don't have ancillary suppliers out here in India. But I guess in the next 5 to 10 years, this will change.
They will probably develop.
AI scheme coming in with healthcare being now at the forefront of the government interest also. That should change over a period of time.
Very interesting. So let me move on and ask you, I mean, you know, you've run so many businesses, and it's very interesting. You said, you know, when they moved you from a 45 team to a 1,000 member team, and then, you know, you built large teams. What would you say, Anish, is your leadership style?
So, you know, one is always focus on the underlying process rather than obsessing about the eventual outcome. But I don't like the idea of shortcuts. Mm-hmm. And if process is right, then eventually the outcomes will be better than anticipated.
Correct.
And the problem is that people get very sort of edgy very early. And that is why, you know, some shortcuts are made, mm-hmm. which sort of, you know, derail the growth of the company or the industry. Mm-hmm. I guess the other thing is that there is nothing more deceptive than the obvious fact. Mm-hmm. Right. I see my role as more of challenging the status quo. You know, my role as a leader is that of being a challenger in chief. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to prevent the organization from falling into any kind of a complacent zone. Mm-hmm. That is a very important part of the job that I do. And I need to make sure that, you know, people don't sort of, you know, narrow themselves down. Yes, I have to say yoga. Mm-hmm. Right. The third job as a leader, I think, which is very important, is to figure out what not to do.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing is more paralyzing than the idea of, you know, limitless possibilities. We can do this, we can do that, we can do everything. My belief is less is more, and limitation is liberating, right? So, you know, be the best at what you do, but don't try to be everything to everybody, because you can't. Very, that doesn't really happen, right?
Very, very well said.
Consistency in leadership is very important. Sorry, you know. And,
go ahead, please.
Consistency constantly beats, you know, hot and cold. Mm. So I would rather, you know, be sustainable, build sustainable growth engines rather than having a lot of ups and downs. Mm. And ultimately, you know, as cliched as it may sound, it all boils down to people, right?
Correct.
Hire the best people, don't compromise there at all.
Correct.
And, you know, just make sure that you hire people who are significantly better than you. Mm. That always plays out.
Fascinating. You know, I've often argued with people that in the old days, there used to be something that you would call superstar CEOs,
right?
You know, where, and then you can name many of them across the whole world. But I think that generation of superstars seems to have disappeared now.
Yeah.
With, you know, solid, grounded people like you.
Who are, sometimes it leaves Ubery behind also, right? I mean, after Jack Welch, the value destruction that happened at GE.
Yeah.
And it may or may not be attributable to a superstar leader, mm. but the fact of the matter is that, you know, once a person becomes larger than the organization, then I guess somewhere something's got to give.
Absolutely. So my next question, when I was reading about you, you mentioned that you have a very deep devotion for India.
Right.
I want to understand what motivates this deep devotion.
So for me, you know, my grandfather on my mother's side was a freedom fighter. Mm. And right from my childhood, my siblings and I were always brought up on stories around India's glory, you know, the path to freedom and what all went into getting us to where we were. And, you know, the bedtime stories were all related to India's independence movement.
Correct.
And that sort of has stayed with all of us, right? So I guess you know, and once you go outside of India and when you see a lot of progress that has happened elsewhere, mm-hmm. you feel that with the kind of talent with the kind of resources you have, why would you not regain the glory of the past? Now, the glory would have been 400 years back,
yeah.
but that doesn't mean that, you know, as a country, we should sort of just let that pass by. And not take on the opportunity, right? And you've seen countries like China that have really come back. Mm. You know, before 1979, they were significantly behind us. And look at where they are now, right? So to me, you know, the fact of the matter is that as a country, we have got tremendous amount of potential, great resources, you know, one of the best people. Mm. And, you know, we need to give everything that we have to create an India for the next generation, which has to be significantly better than what we were brought up in, right? I mean, it has changed a lot in the last 20 years for sure. Yep. But I think we've got a long way to cover there.
Right? Oh, I agree with you. I mean, I think this feeling of national pride needs to come in a much, much stronger way in everybody now. And I think it's happening.
Absolutely.
So Anish, let me move to the last segment of our conversation with some questions for you personally. What would you say are some of your core values?
So I think, you know, Ashutosh, integrity tops everything.
Mm.
Integrity is zero tolerance for me.
Mm.
And, you know, I guess that's where I've seen that countries that have demonstrated high levels of integrity have also been able to buck the growth curve and really do phenomenally well for themselves, right? So work ethics and ethics of integrity or the culture of integrity across any organization or any human being is very, very important.
Mm.
And compliance cannot be taught, right? I mean, we grow with compliance, so we know what is good and bad. And that's why it's important that we stick to that That is the only way how we as a, you know, people will be able to sort of grow. The other is to be in an egoless state. And leadership, you have to take decision making all the times.
Correct.
And if you don't exhibit flexibility, now a lot of people think that because I'm a leader, you know, what I've said has to be cast in stone. And though I may understand that I took a wrong decision, I have to stick to it. You know, to be, when a situation changes, you have to change your stance. And you cannot allow ego to dictate that you are heading, you know, towards jubilee. Right. So integrity and egoless state, I think personally, I hold them very core to my being and, you know, my evolutionary stage. Of course, you know, you keep on evolving on all different dimensions. Right. But these are something I hold very close to, even with the teams that I hire.
Very interesting. And again, as you look back at life, a very successful professional, led large teams, building a very successful entrepreneurial journey. From where you stand today, what does success mean to Anish?
I guess success is more a peace of mind, the satisfaction that you put in your best efforts to be the best that you were capable of being. Right. And, you know, I've always seen that if you keep the mental mode of I cannot do this aside, you're more or less able to manage things that you want. Right. And somewhere, you know, someone, and, you know, I think this was also quoted in one of the Hindi movies, that if you really want to want something, then the entire universe will conspire to make it happen.
Correct.
If you really want something, it will happen. Mm. All you need to do is, you know, make sure that you're completely devoted to that particular cause. And, you know, failure is a part of life. Be happy with failures, because that's the only way to learn. You know, there will be good days and there will be bad days. We cannot let failures define us.
So, you know, this your last comment gives me an interesting segue to my next question, which is on failure. You know, I've just got a new book that's come out 2 weeks ago on failure. Oh. I've often said, parents in South Asia don't teach children it's okay to fail. We're always told first out, head of the line, et cetera, et cetera. Yet we fail.
Yeah.
My question to you, Anish, is what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
I think the biggest learning has been that, you know, it is not our failures that define us as much as how we respond to them, right? Because failing fast is a credo. That's what I've been following, and it has worked beautifully for me, because, you know, you will fail, and you have to encourage a culture of failure in the organization. For me, you know, mediocre success doesn't excite me as much as somebody coming and saying that, oh, I failed, and, you know, this is what I've learned out of the process, and this is how we can do things differently, right? And for me, most of my failures I would attribute to decision making. Either it has been acting in haste or taking too long to decide.
Okay.
Right. So that has been, you know, sort of one of the biggest learnings, that, you know, you can't wait forever to decide. Neither can you just start taking decisions on the spot. You've got to have your mental models in place. And that is why, you know, your reading, your interactions, you have to keep on creating mental models in your mind that sort of helps you to triangulate different points of data that allow you to take decision. The other one is expecting that, you know, what will happen is not the same as what should happen. Sometimes we say that, you know, just because we are doing this, this is going to happen. Right? It doesn't happen that way.
Correct.
Life happens when you're busy making plans.
Absolutely.
And one has to be ready to deal with different kind of circumstances and not get derailed just because things didn't happen the way they were supposed to be. And one more has been that, you know, you don't get stuck to your beliefs. Beliefs are basically hypotheses that need to be tested, and they shouldn't be stuck to you. You know, you have to be in an evolutionary state, because, you know, if you think that this is the only way something can happen, or this is the only way why something happens, you will miss the boat completely.
Fantastic. And Anish, my last question to you, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to all your comments. What would your advice be to a young individual who's starting off on their journey as an entrepreneur?
I guess it starts with the journey, right? The hardest part is starting. Once you get that out of the way, the path automatically getting created, right? So you have to start. I mean, if there's something that you really are passionate about, there's something that you want to do, then you have to start heading into that direction. Just thinking about it is not going to take you anywhere. Right? I guess the second is that, you know, dreams don't magically unfold just because you want them to. you have to work towards making them happen. And there will be ups and downs. That's a part of life. You will have to take everything in your stride and keep on moving. Giving up is not really an option. Once you're heading in the direction that you want to and you're passionate about it, then patience is a larger virtue than anything else.
Amazing.
Most of the people give it, and most of the races are lost at the 95th percentile mark, because you know the last 5% is when you need to conserve all your energy and run at your fastest, and by that time people have burned themselves out, right?
Right.
And I guess the last piece of advice I'll leave them with is, don't rationalize, try to be rational. Most of the time we end up spending time being rationalizing, this didn't happen because of this, or even if this would have happened, that would have happened, right? This is all rationalization. Let's be rational, let's look at practical elements, and then keep on developing ourselves.
Fabulous. Anish, thank you so much. You know, I've really loved our conversation. From the very first word that you said, how important mobility is for an individual when they're starting off on their career, to what you said recently about an egoless state for a leader. I mean, it's a very difficult state for leaders to reach, but it looks like you have reached there. Thank you again so much for this amazing conversation.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh, for having me here. And it was wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.